The Know Your Gear Podcast.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Welcome to the Know Your Gear Podcast, episode 355. Let's get into things, shall we? And I think that's the important part. Let's get into the subjects and topics. There's a lot this week. The first one came from Ken, who says, Phil, why did you have to wait to show us the Valente guitar? So if you watched the premiere of the Valente guitar, which is right behind me that I can't point to because the camera's reversed from what I see, I reviewed that guitar and put it in a video. It was posted yesterday. That guitar was a long time in the making. So, Luigi had originally reached out to me before COVID or at the beginning of COVID, I want to say 2020 for sure. And we started talking about building a guitar, and then, you know, obviously the boom happened. He started getting into with customers. I made a comment on the live, you know, broadcast yesterday of it that, that he prioritized customers over, you know, sending it to a YouTube channel for review because although that generates a lot of sales, he just wanted to take care of customers. And so I thought that was really admirable and I was like really cool with it. And then to be honest, what happened was by the time he had the guitar ready, by the time things slowed down or the world kind of, you know, sorted out and he could get the guitar built and shipped to me, by the time it got to me, my world has changed so much since 3-4 years ago to where now when something shows up, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have somebody scheduling everything for me now and things are scheduled out now. I mean, I was in talks yesterday about, you know, how I'm finishing up April and it's still in March. And then, you know, we have to talk about May and June already, you know, so scheduling is far out, to see what gets in and what gets done based on my schedule. So, that was a main issue, a pushback. Plus, I did about 4 versions of that video. I think the patrons saw 1 or 2 of those versions of the video. Because again, I was trying to capture the magic of the guitar. I really wanted to capture it. It's the very first guitar that's ever been sent to the channel that was built by one luthier. And I thought that was very special and I wanted to give, a extra special kind of, you know, love to that. Because, you know, you see all these guitars, they're beautiful guitars here, and, you know, you guys have beautiful guitars, but let's face it, most of us are not going to own a guitar built by one person. You know, it's not only expensive, but it's scary. You know, you don't know what to expect. And that's one thing that what's nice about the channel, and I want to thank you guys for these opportunities. I have the opportunity to have a guitar sent to me and I get to check it out and I get to convey to you the things I see that are good and bad. And, you know, I don't have to go into it always scared, you know, like, oh no, I'm going to lose so much money if I hate this. And so that's why I try to give you as much details as possible so that doesn't happen to you guys. So you could kind of go in with a more educated, you know, mindset for things. The one thing I regret in that video, I got to point out is I talked about the price of the guitar a little bit briefly and I talked about some of the used ones that were holding value. I don't know if I pointed that out, but the one thing I want to point out is the guitar is expensive, but if I should have said it and I kind of thought about it and then I just didn't do it. It's about the same price as a Sur guitar. If you go for spec, your a Valente guitar, which is basically handmade by a luthier in Italy, is priced at what a Sur modern is at with the similar specifications. So the reason I tell you that is both of those guitars are very expensive, of course, but I think that put it more in perspective than I did in the video, and I kind of regret that. It's one of the things after you watch a video and you read some of the comments, you're like, I wish I added that or put that or said that. So there you go. So to answer that question, there you go. Okay, what else do we have? The 251 says, Phil, I'm playing with a drum machine into a guitar combo amp using a line selector pedal. Do I need to be worried about the bass blowing out the speaker? You could. You didn't say what kind of combo amp. So first of all, the amp is really not the problem, although you can damage amps when you put, you know, powered electronics through them. I mean, there's not a lot of damage that can be happened, but I've heard of, you know, things you can do to amplifiers. So you just want to monitor that, make sure you're not, you know, redlining the signal into the amplifier from the drum machine. But the big concern, of course, would be the speaker and what you can do that. And here's the deal with that. you know what it is. It's going to be the low frequencies of the drums that are going to be damaging to the speaker. And it just depends on how much that speaker is moving and how much bass is going through it. I did a video playing guitar or basses through guitar amps and talking about that. You know, the biggest misconception, it's about the amp. It's not. It's about the speaker. The truth is, if you have a combo amp, in my opinion, if you have a combo amp like a Line 6 or a Katana or an Ampfire, that the speaker is more of a reference speaker and less so much of a guitar speaker. Guitar speakers are very thin. That is why we worry about them so much. They are usually thinner, and they usually don't have, because it kind of kills the tone, they don't put the rubberizing thing around the edge of the cone, and in a lot of cases, so the speakers can get blown very easily. Also, they're not rated for the frequency response that you need for the low frequencies. So again, the speaker's moving too much, and it, you know, you can damage the speaker. And you don't have to just blow it. You can damage it. It just won't sound the same. So I would be very cautious about it. But I would also, again, reference the speaker information. Don't worry about the amplifier. So go online and find out what you can find out about that speaker. And find out if you'll be safe. Think about this. What I would imagine, I don't think it's far-fetched conclusion to come to, is that if your amplifier has any ability to Bluetooth into it for music, or plug in an eighth inch and plug in music, or has any ability to plug music into that amplifier, I would assume that speaker is rated for the drum machine no differently than the music. So you'd be safe. That's the main thing I would focus on, again, is that. But if you have if you're telling me you have a Marshall combo or something like a tube combo amp or something like that has a line in, I would be a little cautious of low frequencies. Like I said, research the speaker, not the amp. I think you'd be fine. Is what I would, you know. I'm sorry, I'm just laughing at some of the comments. Okay, so let's go to the next thing. Let's see. Amanda sent me a question. She sent me from Music J. Says, "Hey, Phil, what are your thoughts on the Made in Mexico Fender Deluxe Player Strats? I have the opportunity to buy one used in excellent condition for $475. That's a good price now. I think that's back to where that's normalized. It's so much, so crazy how expensive they all got during the boom, you know, and the fear was they were going to stay there. And I really think a lot of the prices have settled down a little bit, you know, and everybody always makes comments referencing just their little, don't, you know, you look, if you look for a thing, one thing to prove my statement wrong, you'll find it. I'm not looking at one thing. I'm looking at a large, you know, spectrum of things. What I mean by that is, if I look at 50 different brands of guitars and I go, okay, I can conclude from looking at the average used guitar from 50 different brands that there are, you know, they have come down 10-15%. And then somebody goes, oh, no, you're not. No, 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 Phil, this rare guitar that I looked up once is still holding value. Like, well, yeah, it's the outlier, not the... So yeah, it's nice to see the Made in Mexico Fenders coming down in price. $475 seems a good price now in today's market. I like it, but I can't find much info online. You know, I'm a huge fan of Made in Mexico guitars. I've said this before. During COVID, we know they had a lot of fit and finish issues in the American facility, in the Mexico facility. Most of those fit and finish issues that I came across and I showed you in videos and talked about here on the channel were things that you could learn to do or take to your local tech. To me, those are not deal breakers because it's not super expensive. And everybody's going to have a reference of that. To me, super expensive is $100 to $150. To me, if you buy a guitar, I mean, I understand if you buy a $100 guitar, what I'm saying doesn't make sense, but I'm talking about a nice guitar. Like, this is a nice guitar. You buy a nice guitar and you like it, and then once you discover you like it, you want to put $100 to $150 into it to make it a great guitar. I think that's a reasonable expense, whether that's labor costs for setup and fretwork, whether that's electronics work, whether just upgrading parts, whatever it is, I think that's a reasonable expense. Where I caution people is at any price is when you have to put $400, $500, $600, $700. You can get a repair ticket up pretty fast if you have some of the wrong problems. So I'd say we're, you know, the policy on the channel is always buy it. if you're going to hang out with guitar addicts and ask them if you should buy something, it's bad. You know, you should know what kind of advice you walked into. So buy it, but you know, just be prepared that it's $475 plus. you know, whatever expenses. My thought process on that guitar without seeing it, not knowing the year, I would say number one thing is maybe fret sprout or some fret work that needs done that can be done very easily, in my opinion, with a little bit of education. So, okay. All right. The next one. Thank you, Amanda, for that one, by the way. She also sent T-Bone. T-Bone says, hey, Phil, at what price point should a guitar come with minor issues? None. No guitar should come with any issues. Now, I know that's a hard line. We can say that. But I don't, you know, what's interesting is reviewing all these guitars. You know, I mean, selling guitars, working on guitars, that's giving me a great experience. But nothing's giving me more experience than ripping guitars apart and going through them and being able to go through the data that I have and see. And what I've kind of learned with the imperfections is this. There is no guitar that is perfect. No guitar. Oh, that's not true. Okay. I have a guitar that's videos coming that's perfect. There's no guitar made from natural materials that is perfect. I have a guitar that I have coming that I'm going to review, and I almost dare to say the video is boring as hell because it's just me going, amazing, perfect, most perfect thing I've ever, you know, worked on or put my hands on. But it is man-made materials, and it was machined to perfection, in my opinion. But that outlier out there, you know, whether you're looking at, you know, I've told you guys, I bought a PRS Hollow Body 2 that was crazy money. The nut was glued on, not in the right spot. I had to fix that. You know, I reviewed a Fender Ultra Tele where the fret sprout was really bad, and there was a couple other issues. The Valente guitar, that was beautiful work of art, had, you know, to me, the screws should have been lowered, and the frets could have been dressed a little bit smoother. Although, like I said, I did a lot that it did come from Italy to Arizona. It's still going to have issues. So guitars are going to have issues. So in my experience, it's not at what price point should they not have issues. It's in my experience reviewing the guitars and showing you guys is that there's a price point where your tolerance goes down, because anytime you push your financial envelope, your tolerance for things go down. I don't think that has anything to do with guitars, by the way. I've been to restaurants and had that feeling. You ever have that feeling where you know the bill is going to be insane, four times what you normally pay for a meal, and you're just sitting there going, everything here sucks. The food is okay. The service is okay. I came here. It's supposed to be amazing. This is an expensive place. And maybe if you went to your local Denny's and things were not happening this like you, you know, hoped, you would just be like, well, that's that, you know, there's good days and bad days at the Denny's. But when you go and pay that crazy money for that dinner, you know, you get a little bit more focused on the issues. I find the same thing with guitars. So you'll notice it in my videos. Two things you notice in my videos that I can't control. Okay. I just can't. And I've talked about this and I've had long discussions with other YouTubers publicly about this on their other shows and podcasts. When I don't buy a guitar, when a company sends me a guitar, that is the one thing I can't really talk about, is how it feels to spend that money. And then, like, I always call it the rapture. It's like, okay, I had this money in my wallet. Now it's gone. Now I have this thing. How do I feel about that? And when I buy a guitar, as you guys seen, I've bought so many guitars on this channel. Sometimes when a guitar comes that I bought and there's an issue, you notice the tone of my voice is a little bit more upset, because my money's gone and now I have this. When I find issues with guitars that are sent to me, I don't fake that. I don't really care because I didn't spend any money. So if you notice, I detract from that. I just kind of give you more information, as much information, which is why I try to stay. That's why, by the way, when I mentioned earlier that I decided not to talk about the value proposition of a Sur versus the Valente, that was one of the reasons why I was like, I want to stay away from trying to justify a price on an instrument that I didn't actually physically pay for. It's an argument that I just don't like. You know, it's tough. It's a tough thing. So on videos where I buy the stuff, I'll tell you how I feel about the value. On videos where they send stuff, I try not to talk about the value. I just focus on the quality and the specifications to give you as much information as possible. So back to this T-Bone's question is, you know, when you buy something, I think it's more about you and less about the actual instrument. But the actual answer is every guitar has flaws. There's no, I found no exception to it at any price point. The idea that you're not going to have to deal with something is what makes you crazy. It's what makes all of us crazy. This idea that, you know, you if you are upset with a guitar doing something, if you think you can spend money out of that problem, you are likely to spend some money out of that problem. In other words, if you buy a $3,000 guitar, you may not come across the problems you come across on a $300 guitar. However, I have many times over seen those problems, and sometimes worse. And the only thing I can tell you is it's less likely, but it's still common. So it's just about your expectations, which is why when I tell you guys last week, this ties into something last week, I talked about, you know, if I won the lottery, I wouldn't buy $20,000 guitars. And somebody actually made a comment. I really enjoyed the comment that they put in the video. Something about, you know, if, you know, Phil, they basically said, Phil, you don't understand, you know, if you had that money, you would buy those guitars, and here's why. And I was like, you know, it's funny. I appreciate their, you know, their input. No, I can tell you right now for a fact. I can tell you for a fact that if no matter how much money I had, even if I was Elon Musk, I would not be buying $20,000 guitars. It's just not going to happen. It's never going to happen. And I know you say, people say, you never say never. Well, here's the deal. Never say never. Sure, I understand that. But let me tell you why I know. Because technically, I could figure that out now. It's not a hard thing to figure out. I mean, I have a lot of nice guitars. I've owned a music store. I've had the ability to buy as expensive guitars as you can imagine, whether they were on deals or not. And what I always tell you is what I've come to conclusion is that I don't get joy from that. So it's not something I find. I don't personally get joy from that. So it's not something I pursue. It doesn't matter what it's, you know. Scott wants to know if I rent one. I would not rent one, so you know. No. I mean, that's a value. That's a actually interesting comment. Would you rent one? I don't know. You know, it's funny. I think it's because I do enjoy having a bunch of guitars. I like the spice of life is variety. And I like, you know, like looking, doing the show right now, talking to you guys. I have to tell you, just so you know, how if you catch me smiling every once in a while, I'm smiling in between. It's because I keep getting that Gretsch in my view. And to me, looking at that Gretsch, it's like beautiful. It's just, all those guitars behind me are beautiful. But that Gretsch, every time I see it, it's just something about that guitar just, you know, makes me smile because it's just such an iconic, you know, instrument and it's cool. And, you know, if I had the crazy money to buy a $20,000 version of that, you know, maybe get a real one, a vintage one, I don't care. I don't know how it's going to give me any different feeling. So, play till it hurts says a $20,000 guitar won't make you play any better. I understand those comments. Let's talk about that for a second. Let's go on a diary about that. That's one of my favorite comments. You know, somebody put on a video recently of mine. It was on the second channel. I enjoyed it. By the way, if you want to get me to read your comments, put them on the second channel because again, it's a smaller channel. So when I poke in there, I get to see a lot more activity. Somebody put that I have more guitars than skill, right? Like I have more guitars. Phil, this guy has more guitars than he can play. In other words, I heard this before, more guitars than I know chords. Which is always funny to me because I'm like, there's only four chords, right? I just want to make sure I'm right on that. I think I read that once. I only know three of them. So I read there's four chords, but I only know three. But so once I get five guitars, I have more guitars than chords. But what I love about those statements is that I don't see where they're connected. In other words, you know, when somebody says a nicer guitar won't make you play better, I don't think that really is anyone's real logic. Some people get into that logic. I don't get into that logic. I don't get into the, like, if I have a nicer guitar, I play better. The one thing I will caution you is this, and it's not for everyone, but I would say please take this advice with as much weight as possible. Okay, this is what the experience of I have to give, this one experience. If you buy nicer guitars, at some point you will realize the law of diminishing returns. You will notice that just you're not getting anything that gives you any more joy, right? It's not doing anything for you. But then the worst part is at some point you will recognize, you will figure out, everyone does that I've ever talked to, everyone I've interviewed, everyone I've hung out with comes to the same conclusion that has gone these journeys as deep as I've gone. You will come to the conclusion that so many guitars back, you were the happiest. And now you can't go back there because now you do recognize that there's something a little, it's the 1% better. This guitar is 1% better than that guitar. And now you're stuck on this guitar, which really you would have never wanted if you would have stayed with the other guitar. So I do caution people not to, you know, keep spinning upwards. It doesn't really return anything, you know, like he said, it doesn't make you play any better, if that helps. I love those conversations. By the way, those are my favorite conversations to have on this channel. You know, spending money on guitars and the joy I get from it. Because guitar demos and stuff like that and reviews, I think, are about information. I think this is about guitars and music and talking about how it affects you. 251 says, do you really think Petrucci sold more artist series than Vi? So I know the person who knows the answer, and I asked him, and he said he didn't know. So, okay, so let's back up there. So here's what's interesting about this. So if you guys don't know, I interviewed John Petrucci a while back, and then, of course, on the second channel, we put pod clips, and there was an interesting clip where he said the John Petrucci Music Man was the number one selling artist guitar in the world after the Les Paul. Now, where that data came from, I don't know, because I have, I've done videos where, for instance, here's one I did. I did a video about the Wolfgang guitars, Five Things You Don't Know video. And in the research of doing Eddie Van Halen guitars, let me tell you what I learned. No one seems to know enough. In other words, Music Man doesn't know what PV did. PV doesn't know what EVH now does, and you know, EVH doesn't know what Kramer did. So trying to figure it out and asking these guys, they don't really seem to give you a lot of information. At least they wouldn't give me the information I needed. So trying to figure out how many of each one sold to kind of accumulate, you know, how many guitars were sold by Eddie Van Halen was in the task I went down was impossible. I couldn't figure it out. Okay. And I put a lot of effort and work into it. I mean, it was months and months of this, trying to figure this information out. And one thing I think about is with Petrucci is I wonder if he was, because he obviously said it in the video. And he really, and I even came back at him, you know, with a little like, are you really? And he's like, yeah, he was really convinced that his is the number one selling artist guitar in the world after the Les Paul. And in my mind, the argument would then be, maybe he means I wonder if there's a qualifier that we don't know. So here's what I mean by that. When I was a kid, I was into airplanes and into jets. Okay, I grew up on Tucson, Arizona. I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, and if you're familiar with Tucson, Arizona, all you have to know is it's an Air Force town, right? Everybody lives off the base. The base is the income, basically, of the town, and so you see a lot of jets, and especially because there's a big graveyard of jets there, at least there was, and it's really cool. So the point is, there's weird ways that they would qualify things they would say to you. They would say, the C-5 Galaxy is the largest cargo plane in the free world. Because the Russian one was bigger. but that's not the free world. See how you could say thing and qualify it? John Petrucci's guitar, artist guitar, might be the number one most selling guitar from a single brand. Because think about this. There are artists like Eddie Van Halen. He was technically with four brands. You got EVH, PV, Music Man and Kramer, technically, right? And I know technically he didn't have a signature guitar with Kramer, but still, you know, he sold a lot of Kramers and it was associated with it. But you understand. So maybe Petrucci sold more than one, any one of those. I'm not trying to justify it. I'm trying to like walk you down the logic. My thing I can tell you, here's what I can tell you. A few years back, and I don't know how long ago, so I'm going to say 7? I don't know. It could be 10 and it could be 5. It definitely was before COVID. Ibanez had a party for the gym, and it was like anniversary of the gym, and they sold like 1 million gyms. And I remember hearing that going, they sold 1 million gym guitars. I know that to some of you are like, whoa, I can't believe that. And some of you are like, that's it. In the guitar world, like 1 million of anything is like a crazy number. Okay, it's just a crazy number of a product, of a SKU. And so They said they sold a million gems. So that's a lot of gems. So when Petrucci said that he sold more guitars basically than Steve Vai, I was a little skeptical like you guys are. And the funny part is the person who would know this is Larry DiMarzio. So I asked Larry, because here's why he would know this. Petrucci's guitars have DiMarzio pickups in it. and the gym has DiMarzios in it. So he would know who bought more DiMarzios, Music Man or... you know, Ibanez. So I asked him one night, and he honestly said, he goes, you know, I've never looked. I don't know. And he's like, and I told him what Petrucci said, and he's like, oh, yeah, I never, I go, so he goes, maybe they just told him that. That's what he said. He said, maybe Music Man just told him that, and he just, you know, he doesn't know. He's just a guitar player, and they told him, yeah, yours is the best-selling guitar, like, in the world. So a lot of you had said this in the comments in the video, which is like, you know, you'd love to see the numbers. I don't know if you could actually figure out the numbers, because I've tried to figure out numbers with artist guitars, and it's really hard to figure out. But I do agree with every comment I saw in the video, so you know. And the one thing, there's two things I should say that are very important. One, I do agree with every comment in that video. So if you read those comments, it's like, I'm like, yeah, disbelief, you know, this sounds weird. You know, how does the John Mayer not compete now in that? You know, a lot of people mention they see a lot more other brands guitars, other artist guitars more than his. All that I agree with, 100%. The other thing I'm going to tell you is he was the nicest guy, and he seems about as honest and as nice as you can get. And so like I said, I once said this about Paul Reed Smith. I'm going to say it now about John Petrucci. I told you this. Whatever crazy thing you think Paul Reed Smith says, my honest belief is that Paul believes it. Like, he believes it. And I believe John Petrucci, whatever he said, I believe he believes it. So there you go. That's the answer. I don't think there's an agenda to tell us, you know, to go kind of, you know, gaslight us into thinking he's got the best-selling guitar. I believe he thinks it. I just don't know why. So Sunbase says Boss sold over a million Metal Zones. I know. Isn't that crazy? A little fun Metal Zone fact for you guys. Until the Wazacraft, do you know the Metal Zone was unchanged? So I know you're like, well, wait a minute, you know, the SD1. No, the SD1 was changed. I learned this from Boss themselves. The Boss guys explained to me once that the Metal Zone was the longest running Boss pedal in their history that went unchanged. So in other words, they didn't make any changes to the internal specification of the pedal. They didn't change anything about it in any way, where the SD1s actually have, you know, there's versions of the innards being slightly different, and there's changes. And they said, so like until the Wazacraft, it had never been changed. It still hasn't been changed, by the way, but now there is a Wazacraft version. But it made it the longest running one. So you'd have to look at it. You guys have to Google it. I want to say, like, the Metal Zone was like 1992. So, and I think the Wazacraft was like 2017, 18. So think about those, you know, from 2000, generally speaking, without looking it up on Google, I'm going to say my guess, if anyone wants to fact check me, 92 to 2017, the Metal Zone goes unchanged, and it's the longest running unchanged pedal, and they sold a million. Yeah, over a million of those. So it's a crazy pedal. Crazy. I remember the day I had one on layaway and couldn't wait. I thought it was the greatest thing I ever got in my entire life. In fact, to this day, I don't think there was ever a pedal that I ever bought, ever, that when I got it, I had never felt like I had finally got the most pro piece of gear you could ever get in my life, is when I got the Metal Zone. I just remember it was $99 then. So I want to say 94. I got it probably 93, 94, maybe. So about a year after it came out, I think. So somewhere on there, early 90s. And put it on layaway, paid it off in 60 days, got it home, and thought this was the greatest thing I ever heard in my life. I thought I could finally play Metallica. I was like, this is great. Jay Jones saying he got advertising. So we switched it to low mode. We're going to try low mode today. So tell me how the advertising is on low mode. So we turned it off the last 2 weeks to see what happened. For those of you who are probably not going to be interested in this, I'm just going to tell you anyways. 2 weeks ago, I decided to turn off the advertising during the live broadcast to see what happened. And here's what happened. It loses about $100 per episode. So I was like, I first said to myself, well, $100 is not the end of the world. And so for $100, we won't post ads. However, it did occur to me that there are 52 episodes a year, so that's $5,200 a year decrease in revenue to the channel. I was like, oh, that's pretty heavy. That's a lot of money. In YouTube dollars, that's like a lot of money. So today we are experimenting with low mode. So I told you guys, they don't let us do anything other than say yes or no, and then how intense. This is the least intensity you can do. If you guys, if it sucks, we'll remove it. But I'm hoping to find a compromise here. So, you know, I'm just going to see. We'll see. My guess is I'll probably be back to no commercials next week, but we'll see what low mode does. The other fear, by the way, is that when they decrease the ads, YouTube decreases the circulation of your videos because then YouTube doesn't feel I don't know that to be true. I just kind of feel like it's true. So it seems like the videos don't perform as well when they don't get their ad money, which means I don't get my ad money, so to say. So we'll see. We'll figure it out. Like I said, give me feedback. That's all I asked for before. Just like last time, let me know if it was tolerable or intolerable. If you get one ad during this podcast or maybe two, for the live, let me know. But if you get like, two or three, let me know and then we'll knock it off. Okay. Let's go. Sorry. I'm just laughing because, Lee, L-E-T-H. I don't even know how to put that together because it's got a space. L-E space T-H. I'll have to figure that out. Says, nothing will make you love something more than layaway. Oh, God. Yeah, I loved layaway. It was the best ever. So it was awesome. Actually, take that back. I loved layaway until I had a music store, and then I hated layaway. And not for the reason you think, because you're like, oh, you got to wait for money. I learned the hard way why businesses like layaway. Most people never pay off their layaway. It's crazy. A lot of you responsible adults watching this channel who are learning to love in the industry and learn more every day are probably going to be confused by that statement because you're not one in the same with the type of people who did that. But I would be, I can absolutely tell you without any hesitation that a large percentage of layaways that we took on for over a decade never got finished. Even when we called and followed up, even when we sent letters, because we sent letters like, hey, we have to return this to the floor if you don't come make a payment. And so every time we did a layaway, it was like, if I was a different personality, which I wish sometimes I was a little bit, I would be like, woohoo, free money to the store. But it never felt like that. I always feel like, oh, this is going to be a big headache trying to remind these people to do this thing because I don't want to, take money for nothing. And so, actually, that's actually inaccurate because we never took the money for nothing because what we did is we immediately converted the money into a gift card. So they would just have gift cards forever. It was actually a nightmare. When we closed the store, that was the only thing we had to clean up. That was a nightmare. Was we had gift cards from all these like unfulfilled layaways, and my poor wife, man, she made phone calls and sent letters to people and did everything to kind of redeem them out. So, and I think she did like most of them. I don't think very few didn't get redeemed, but who knows? All right. Okay, let's go. Okay. All right. We have Julian says, hey, have you ever tried D'Angelico acoustic guitars? And if so, are they any good? Looking to get another acoustic. I have never tried the D'Angelico acoustics. I own one of their electric guitars and I really, really like it. I have their semi-hollow right there. I really like that guitar a lot. And I reviewed a few of their other electrics and all the electrics I reviewed were very nice as well. I kind of feel like, because like I said, I didn't buy those D'Angelicos, so I never talked about the money proposition, but I kind of felt like they were a little pricey, and I kind of feel like their prices have come down a little bit. I think that's the one thing about D'Angelico is some of their guitars are a little pricey, and some of them are priced a lot better. It's weird. There's a weirdness in their pricing to me. Like some guitars I look at, and I go, it's a great guitar, and it's pretty expensive, and I go, that's basically the same guitar, and it's like $300 less, and I can't understand why. So there's that, but I have not tried their acoustics. If they ever reached out and asked me to do a review of their acoustics, I would gladly accept. So, And they might. They do reach out from time to time. Obviously, I've done Supro. I've done a Pigtronics pedal. I've done D'Angelico stuff. They are another company that I would put in the, you know, like the Paul Reed Smith land and stuff, where they're heavy into social media. So they're always interacting with channels. You're going to see their, you see their stuff. I'm sure if you go to any channel, you see in their stuff. They're actively out there getting their stuff in front of you guys. So, okay. Hold on a second.
We'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at rootsmusicrambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Oh, I don't know. Mark E. Allen says, hey, new merch, what happened to the coffee mugs? My wife made a ton of custom coffee mugs, and we did those for patrons for signups, and we sent those out. I don't know. I realize when I watch other podcasts, like the professional podcasts, the real ones, as I like to call it, the big channels that, you know, talk about, you know, other things besides music and guitar, they're always pushing their merch heavy on their podcasts. And I go, God, I never even bring it up. And sometimes it's 5 to 10 minutes of their show is talking about their merch, you know, and only 6,000 hats left. Look at a hat. And I'm always like, oh, I forgot. I figure I'm wearing the merch. That should be enough. You know, hey, there's, although the irony of this is the merch I'm wearing today, you can't buy. So that's the silliness of this. That's how dumb I am. There you go. Don't listen to me for marketing advice on your merch for your podcast. It's like, apparently be smart enough to wear a shirt no one can buy and a hat that was no one can buy either. There you go. Brian wants to know if I ever tinker with Hamer. Yeah, I've played a lot of Hamers and I've worked on a lot of Hamers over the years, but I've never owned one that I can remember, and that's about it. They're, you know, kind of like I've talked about them before. They were a guitar like ESP when I was younger. You never saw them, and then when they started making affordable ones, you saw lots of those. And then, of course, you know, you get to repair, work on some of the more the 80s era ones, which are really nice. I love, you know, I'm a huge Gary Hoey fan. He played a Hamer forever before he went to Fender. Huge Vernon Reed fan. Vernon Reed played a Hamer. He had, you know, a beautiful Hamer that I loved. And of course, Vernon also played an ESP that I loved as well. So there you go. All right. Let's not jump out of the wrong screen again. Okay. All right. The next subject is... this one came through the email. It said, Phil, you've been talking about the industry more and more lately and about some of the larger stores closing. I think he means in reference to Sam Ash. Do you think that this is the end for mom and pop stores? I think he's alluding that this, you believe this is the end of the mom and pop music stores. No. I've said this before, so this is a great question, good topic. We'll give this 5 minutes, and we'll put it like this. Independent mom-and-pop music stores. Here's how I feel about this. I've said this before. I think they need to adapt to the new market. I think that means they have to do a little bit more internet. They have to be on social media. There's a ton of music stores that you guys are watching on social media that you love. Look, there's Anderton's. There's Flipside Music. There's Casino Guitars. There's a ton. And there's R&A Music. There's a ton of stores that have embraced social media, which for lack of business, if I was going to, I treat you guys like I treat, you know, the inner circle of the people I talk to as well, which means I refer to it the way I refer to it them. They have embraced the free marketing that is available. That is what social media is for a business. It's free marketing. And if it's not free, it is damn near close. And I once said that, and then somebody said, Phil, I don't think you know what a camera means. And I responded to that, and I will always say this, and I meant no disrespect to them, but I needed them to really understand this. I said, hey, no disrespect, but I got 100,000 subscribers. with a cell phone. So you don't need to do, you don't need a camera in a studio. You need to be sincere, go out there and find people who are interested in what you're interested in. And so music stores are doing that. That's one way. The other way is that they can do things is they make their stores unique and interesting when you walk in. You know, there was a time where there was a time where brands made stores. You walked into a store, you knew it. They didn't have Fender, they didn't have Gibson, they weren't a real store. They didn't have Marshall, right? Not a real store. They had to have the brands. You know, you walked in and you're like, ugh, all the brands you never heard of. Now I think it's the opposite. Okay. I had this experience years ago with a bicycle shop. You go into a bicycle shop, and the first time I went into a nice bicycle shop I hadn't been in years, I didn't recognize any of the brands of bicycles. And all the brands I knew, I was like, where's your Schwinn's? Where's that? And they're like, that's at Walmart. I'm like, what? And I think that's gone this way too. When I walk into a Guitar Center, no, not picking on Guitar Center, just when I walk into a Guitar Center, what I see is, in fact, I told you, I can close my eyes and tell you what I see. Okay, ready? On the first two rungs, you're going to see a crap ton of Epiphones. You're going to see 8 Squires. And then you're going to see 2 Schecters. And then on the top two rings, you're going to see 3 Gibsons. And then you see it's the same thing. It's going to be a half a dozen Made in Mexico Fenders. It's going to be a couple American Fenders. It's going to be, you know, a couple EVH guitars. It's going to be, it's accounts. What I see is accounts when I walk in those stores, not guitars. So what I see is FMIC. FMIC means there's Gretsch's on the wall, there's Jackson's on the wall, there's EVH on the wall, there's Fender, there's Squire. That's what's on the wall. And then Fender amps. That's one account, okay? So there was one company giving you one credit line to Guitar Center. And then so when I go, I see the next account, which is Gibson Epiphone. And that's one account. Gibson Epiphone's one account. Well, technically, okay? It can be two accounts. Just like Fender can be multiple accounts of those two. But once you get to the level where you get all those brands, you're going to get one account. When I walk into a mom and pop music store, that's the last stuff I want to see. I don't want to see any of the Guitar Center stuff. I've already seen that. So I want to see everything the Guitar Center doesn't want to carry anymore. I don't mean expensive stuff. It doesn't have to be expensive. It's interesting to walk into a mom-and-pop store and see a row of Reverends. It's interesting to walk into a mom-and-pop store and see a row of Supro amps Guild guitars. I recently just saw a store where they had a bunch of Guild electric guitars and Reverend guitars. And I thought, this is cool. I don't usually get to put my hands on these. And those aren't cheap guitars by any means. But I'm not saying, you know, they're not Sirs. They're not, you know, Tom Andersons. They're not crazy stuff like that. And so you can be a boutique store, sure. But mostly you want to be interesting and definitely want to be used, as much used gear as possible. Because no matter how much the used market has been dominated by Reverb and eBay, there is still an amazing part of touching unique gear that you can't touch anywhere else. Like if you pick up a used Strat, the question earlier we got about the Made in Mexico Strat for $495, they're making a question because we're talking about the internet. If they were in a store and they picked it up, they would know, you know, they would know this is the right guitar for this price. And they would know that if they left it and came back tomorrow, it could be gone and they make that purchase. So I think that's a great way to see, you know, a way for them to prosper. But the one thing I will tell you, what I remind mom and pop shops all the time, and maybe it's a bad analogy, but I like it because I think it's effective, which is this. In the world today, there is Amazon, but there is Etsy. And I understand Etsy is now as corporate as can be too, but just go to the heart of the analogy. There is Amazon, which is mostly mass-produced stuff, okay? Mostly catering to the discount. And then there's Etsy, and that's where you end up getting something strange and unique, right, is Etsy. And again, some of you guys get grumpy because that's what happens, and you go, well, Etsy's not what they were. I understand that, but you understand what I'm saying too. So there are two ways to be successful in the modern world. You can be unique, or you can be the cheapest thing out there. I think so the mom pops, I think, are far from dead. I just think that the ones that don't understand their new role in the market are going to have trouble. And I think a lot of them do on all kinds of levels. And I wish I could give better advice. Some of them, I think, you know, deserve better advice. But I think at the very least, that's enough to help them get sorted out. So to answer your question is no, I don't think it's the end of the mom and pops. I think the mom and pops will be stronger as a whole, there's just going to be a lot less of them. That's just the reality. So, and they're going to have to work. So that started, by the way, with, that started way before the internet, having to work harder for customers, mom and pops. You know, a lot of us are old enough to remember the difference in the mom and pops, you know, versus, you know, we praise mom and pops because it's nice to praise the underdog. But the reality is when the Guitar Centers first came, the reason why they took off was not because their guitars were, their prices were cheaper. That was a big factor. And not because they had bigger variety, because that was a big factor too. Their main thing was they weren't douchebags. Like they, when Guitar Center started out, they just weren't. You could go into Guitar Center and you could buy a guitar and you could get home and go, man, I didn't realize in the store, this thing just doesn't, oh man, it's just not right. And you go back to your mom and pop and they'd be like, all sales final, pound, sand. And you'd be like, what? Can I exchange it? No, all sales final. We'll buy it back from you at a loss. That's how it worked. For those of you younger that are like, yeah, I don't know, Phil must have had a bad experience. That was more norm than you can ever imagine. It was extremely common in the industry, that all sales final. I once personally had a store who I'm friends with now, which is only even a little funnier. Tell me, we are try it before you buy it store. So, you know, I don't want to hear it. You had time to figure out if you liked it before you left. And that's how it worked. And Guitar Center came in with the, you know, we're not even talking about the whole don't touch anything environments. We're talking about the whole, you know, once you bought it, you were stuck with it. And, you know, and like I said, and if you took it back, they would buy it at a huge, massive loss to you. And so Guitar Center injected a little bit of that into the industry, the whole, hey, we'll give you, you know, 30 days to return this, which is crazy. And the reason why this also connects to the current market is, that's why mom and pops have to adapt, because they had to adapt to that to have slightly better return policies. I'm not saying all mom and pops should have a 30-day return, no questions asked. That's almost impossible for most mom and pops, so you know. The compromise that works a lot of times is in-store credit. You know, it's like, hey, I can't give you your money back because I used it to pay payroll and the electric bill, but you know, you can exchange it for a gift card and you can buy something else. And you're a guitar player, you'll find something else. And that's sometimes a reasonable ask for a smaller business. There's compromises there. But the big proponent now is, like I said, when you look at, Sweetwater and you look at online entities now with their customer service and how they have the money to put the muscle behind it, mom and pop's going to have to a little improve that service a little bit. And I use the high-end, there's high-end dealers, and I always tell you this. When I talk about Sweetwater, and we'll end on this note, when I talk about Sweetwater and they take pictures of the guitars and they weigh the guitars, that's really cool. But then you go to Wildwood Guitars, which is, you know, they carry more high-end guitars as a whole. But if you look at Wildwood Guitars, they take actual pictures and they weigh the guitars and they give you the thicknesses of the neck at the 12th and the first fret, which is nice. And you can call them and they will physically go get it for you. Sweetwater does this too, by the way. They'll go get, I don't know if you know this, if you call your Sweetwater rep and tell them, you know, you want to know about the guitar, the rep will actually get the guitar shipped to their cubicle at Sweetwater and talk to you about it over the phone. Wildwood does that as well. And then Wildwood will give you a deal over the phone. I don't speak for them, but I'm just saying, if I was a betting man, I would bet that if you called Wildwood, you might get a deal. So they're really cool. Let's see. Oh, Brian says he made a guitar store mad when he returned a Pete Thorne Sir. Yeah. It's I've experienced it too, Brian, man. It's tough. So the worst thing that ever happened to me, this is going to be a pod clip, I already know it. The worst thing that ever happened to me from a music store is this really, I won't say the name. Isn't that funny? I shouldn't say the name. Should I say the name? Yeah, I'll say the name. So this is what happened to me. It was a store called Sticks and Strings in Tucson. I still think they're there. And I know the guys there. And they were where I bought, you know, my second guitar, and they were a cool store. But what happened to me, the way their policies worked, it really worked in my detriment when I was younger. Here's what happened to me. I uh, I got some money, right? I got some money and I had a Crate Stealth. Okay. And, what happened was I, see, I'm laughing because I mean, this story just sucks, but I'm going to tell it. So hopefully you get entertained with how the old world used to work. So what happened was I had a gift card at Sticks and Strings. I traded in a bunch of gear and I got it turned into a gift. And when I say gift card, this is pre-gift cards. It was a gift, you know, kind of piece of paper that says, if you lose this, you don't, you lost your credit, right? So I got a piece of paper that says, you know, hey, if you lose this, you lose your credit. The story isn't that I lost that, by the way. The story is this. I was a kid, I was a teenager, and I had this slip, and I think it was for like $200 or $300, probably $300. And I didn't know what to get. And so I kept, you know, kept trying to think of something. And I had this Crate Stealth and I thought, you know what I want to do? I want my Crate Stealth to be cool because Crate wasn't cool, even though I love that amp. And I took it in to Sticks and Strings and I had, because it needed tubes done. And I had new tubes done and I had the amp tech, they had an amp tech, do the new tubes. They sent it off the amp tech though. And I did new tubes and they had them put it in vinyl, take it from carpet to vinyl, and they put an Ampeg logo on it because I go, oh, that'll make it look cool. It'll look like an Ampeg. For those that don't know, Lee Jackson designed the Ampegs that had the glowing light up logos. And then he also designed the Crate Stealth. So I knew that as a kid. Like, that's one of the selling factors, the Crate Stealth. I was buying a Crate, but it was, you know, designed by Lee Jackson. That was like a big deal. And so I got this, I got the amp done. And it took months and months and months. And finally it was done. They called me and they go, hey, your amp's done. And I go in, I go, great. And I hand them the gift card or gift certificate. And they go, that's an in-store gift certificate. We can't use it for your amp. And I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, you can't. No, that's repair. Repair is different than in-store here. And, you know, I didn't know anything. I was a kid. So I left. And this is what I did. I go, well, I got to figure out how to get the money. And obviously I never got the money because I was a kid and I didn't have any money. So I think all my money went to my car insurance at that time. Cause I was a teenager and so they sold the amp and I lost that amp and, it was a beautiful amp, but I lost it. And then I think I ended up getting a bunch of crap in the store through time. I think I got strings and then picks and stuff like that. And, because of those weird policies like that, there were, you know, that's what sucks. So there you go. It's just how things were done back then. And, you know, it's dumb. So, you know, I guess it traumatized me. Here's why. I have a Crate Stealth down in the garage that I don't use at all. It just sits down there. I bought one once and I have a Crate Stealth. It's in vinyl. It just sits in the garage. So, yeah. And I don't know. All right. I went for a funny story. It actually bummed me out a little bit. Remembering like how that happened. That sucked. Okay. Let's go to another subject or question. And then we'll do something fun, even though all this is fun. Okay, let's refresh this. We have Litvay says, "Hey Phil, please tell us about your Jaguar pickups." About my Jaguar pickups? I think you mean like if Blackstock, if we make Jaguar pickups. Litvay, my entire pickup life is all revolved around this new launch of Northern Lights that are more affordable. They're everywhere here in my house right now. There are boxes, there are pickups. The announcement will come once they're all done. Sean is helping me. The kids have to come and help me. We're all just working together as a team to get this done. And that's all my focus is on, is so I can have a successful run of more affordable Northern Lights pickups. It's a newer version of the Northern Lights. And I say newer, just something I tweaked a little bit. I want to tweak in the recipe, so to speak, to my preference and more affordable. So that's all my focus on. And then it's actually taking so much time away from other things. Cause again, I don't want to not make content and I don't want to not, you know, do the second channel and do all the other things. You know, once we're done with this run, we'll do that run, and then we'll do the next run and the next run and so on and so on and so on. And it's not a lot. Don't you think I'm making thousands of these things? There's no way to do that, but it's a lot. So it's more than I think people will order, so we should be good. Okay. Okay, sorry about that. It says, Brandon says, Phil and Tribe, what are your thoughts on the Fender American Pro 2 Telecaster with rosewood board and the mercury finish? Hate it, man. Dude, that mercury finish is so, so tacky. Rosewood. It smells funny. And I'm just kidding, man. No, I love it. The American Professional 2 is my favorite series of Fender American guitars. I like it better than the standard. I have a standard Telecaster, but I have an American Professional 2 Stratocaster, and I love the neck profile on the new American Professional 2s. I like it on the Telecaster. I'm a rosewood person, so I like rosewood on the Telecaster more. That's what I have on my Telecaster. Although traditionally Telecasters are maple fretboards. It's just, you know, most people. So, you know, not only is that true, because, you know, somebody's going to say something. That's what somebody always says something because they think I'm giving. I'm sorry, I can't always kind of disseminate when I'm giving an opinion or a fact, right? This is not opinion. This is fact. Maple fretboard Telecasters outsell rosewood fretboard Telecasters. 2-to-1 would be a joke. It's probably like 10-to-1. And it's so much so that in certain models of Fender Telecasters, you can't even get rosewood because they just don't even want to waste their time because they sell so much maple over rosewood. That is just the way it works. So I like rosewood Telecaster necks because I think they're more unique and cool. And that's a cool finish. That's a cool model. And you basically asked a bunch of guitar addicts if you should buy a guitar, and the answer is always yes. Okay, so Grumpy Mike Guitar says, I'm really enjoying the Phil McKnight 2 channel. Very well done. Cheers. Thank you, man. It's been interesting to do this. This all started with AI. You know, they say AI can make these clips for you and stuff, and I got AI. And here's what I learned. I heard somebody say this. I'm going to steal their way of saying this. AI is like a C+ student, okay? And maybe that may be my problem. Maybe I'm not using the AI correctly. But I've used the AI for a bunch of things on YouTube now, and here's what I've found. It's very effective if you want a very average answer or clip or title. It will get you stuff that works, but it's not like I'm in awe of it in any way. So I did a few using the AI stuff, and what I found was you didn't respond to those very well. I then did them my way, and then literally went from 2,000 to 30,000 views on this, doing the same kind of clips. The downfall of that is I started down this row thinking, oh, well, I'll have AI do it, because for every fifth Instagram post is somebody going, hey, have AI do your stuff. And I'm like, okay, that sounds great. And then now I'm doing it manually because it just is more effective this way. So thank you so much, Grumpy, for acknowledging that, because it is weirdly more work than I thought it would be editing those up and putting them out. But I enjoy it. I do enjoy it. And I like having a reference of it. And I like not having you guys email. You know, so many emails now are, hey, Phil, you said this once. Where did you say that? And I'm like, well, they're timestamped. But with 350 videos all timestamped, I mean, it's a catalog you can't get information from. So I'm pulling them for reference for you guys now. You just go to the second channel. They're there. They're titled. They're ready to go. Okay, the next question I got was, why is it? It's missing. Okay, so this is why it's sometimes smart to back things up. Okay, the question was, I don't have it. I lost somebody's question. I pinned it. So I'm going to grab it now off my phone, I thought, because I come into this chat, I give up. So here's the sense of the question. The question was, I apologize, I didn't get your name and I somehow lost your question, but I want to answer it because it was an easy question to answer for me to answer. The question was, hey, Phil, they just got a guitar with lace sensor pickups, red, white, and blue, and they want to know if I like them and what I think of them. And I thought, oh, well, this is a great thing. Let me grab a guitar for you real quick. This will take a second. Okay, so this is my copper Strat. You guys, some of you remember, this is old. It hasn't been out in a while, right? It's so funny when I say copper now. Now it doesn't look copper anymore now that we have the amazing copper penny metallic right there, Kiesel. And if you guys remember, this used to have the humbucker set up exactly like the Kiesel. Of course, because I play the Kiesel all the time, having two identical guitars with the same pickup setup didn't make sense. So I returned this to Lace Sensors. So these are Lace Sensors, red, silver, and blue. And it's a standard wiring setup. So volume, two tones, five-way switch. And the reason I did this is that one of the things I did when I had this custom shop made, I don't know if I ever showed you guys this. This is a custom shop. And I don't know if I ever showed you this on the back plate, if you can see that. I don't know if you can. I don't think you can. Let me see what you can see. Here you go. There you go. It says McKnight Guitar Company. So it has my store's name on it. Fender did that because we had 16 of these made, 16 custom models like this to these specifications when we were a custom shop dealer. And just like Wildwood and stuff, they put your name on it when it's your guitar. And so when I spec this out, I spec'd it out as a hybrid between a Strat Plus, if you guys know what a Strat Plus is from the early 90s, and a Charvel. That's what that guitar is, okay? And because once I had the Kiesel Delos, and that's what I was playing, I'm not really playing that guitar anymore, the Fender, I thought, you know what, let's put some Lace pickups in it because I want it to be more like a Strat Plus. And it's got the same bridge, it's a Strat Plus. It doesn't have the roller nut like a Strat Plus, but, you know, it's close enough. So now it's set up like a Strat Plus. These are slightly older Lace Sensor pickups that I had laying around, so I put them in. The Lace guys reached out and asked me if I was interested in doing some videos for them, and I haven't had a chance to respond to them, say yes or no, because I just don't have, the answer is I don't have the time, you know. It's tough. Like I said, I have to balance, you know, like everybody, I'm balancing stuff. So to answer your question, yeah, I do like Lace Sensor pickups. I do like that series. Here's what's interesting about this that's weird. I don't know why, but there's something about those pickups that I love, and I just love plugging into a Fender clean amp and playing those pickups. They don't sound like humbuckers. They don't sound like single coils. They don't sound like P90s. They just have their own kind of thing going, and I love them. I always have. So there's just something cool about that. So that's the answer to that one. I just thought that would be fun. Because like I said, I wanted to answer that question because I have my closet here, and it's the guitars are on a rack, so I can just get pretty much any guitar you guys ask me about. Where before, I'd have to always used to go to another room to get guitars, and it wouldn't work. Now I can just walk right into the rack. Okay. All right, we're on the hour. Before I do any questions, guess what we're going to do? We are going to do something for fun, because it's fun time now, if I don't mess it up. First, we're going to do the Guitar of the Week. It's Guitar of the Week time. We don't have a Guitar of the Week time chant. We need a little song. So I thought we're going to do this from now on about the halfway part in the show, which is Guitar of the Week. Every week I'm going to highlight one of my guitars or a guitar that I find is interesting or, you know, something like that. A little quick, a little review, a little fun. And so today, let's do that. So let me get the Guitar of the Week guitar. It's a Texas Toast Challenger. Check that out. Okay, so let's go here. This is a level 2. So let me tell you this. Let me demo it. Let me show you. Let me talk about it. Let me explain it because it's an odd thing to explain. Okay, so a few months ago, I feel like, I was doing a live show, and in the feed, people were saying, did you see Texas Toast is sending you a guitar? And I had no idea what the hell you guys were talking about. So I was like, I don't know. So a couple years ago, at least 1 year ago, probably two, time is hard to kind of remember. I had mentioned on the show that I wanted to maybe purchase a Texas Toast. They had a Tele guitar, like a daily driver guitar there on their website that was very reasonably priced. And I was like, well, maybe I'll buy one of those and do a review or something, right? And somebody, one of you guys must have reached out to the Texas Toast guys. Matt reached out to me and he basically said, hey, you know, we'd love for you to have that guitar. Let's work something out. And I, in the discussion of it, I said, well, I was just thinking about doing it like as independent kind of video kind of thing. And in that discussion, we had a discussion about, I told him, I gave him some input or advice, if you will, that was unsolicited as always. It's always unsolicited advice, but I can't help it. It comes out of my mouth. I said, you should send me, if you're going to send me a guitar, he's like, we'd like to send you a guitar. I go, if you're going to send me a guitar, send me a guitar that you're super proud of, that you're, that you would want everyone to know about, that's your guitar. I go, don't send me a Tele, you know, style guitar. I go, you know, send me the guitar that you, you know, if we're going to work together, like a co-sponsor kind of thing, send me something like that. And he said, okay. And that was basically almost the last we talked about it. We had a few other discussions about a model that they were working on. And then, of course, you guys said, hey, they send you a guitar. And then in the mail, guess what showed up? This beautiful Texas Toast Challenger Level 2 with a mahogany body with these beautiful tortoiseshell plates on the back that are level into the body. So you have two of them right here. Then you have a maple neck. Looks like a three-piece maple neck with two walnut stripes right there. This is a set neck, okay? String through body with looks like, it looks to me as like a hip shot bridge. That's what it looks like to me. I could be wrong, but it looks like a hip shot hardtail. We have two Dylan Talks Tone P90s with cream covers. And then we have 22 beautifully done, handcrafted, awesome nickel silver frets with a bone nut. Some kind of black overlay on the headstock. I don't know if it's ebony or what material it is. It doesn't, it could be ebony. It's beautiful. Texas Toast logo. And then of course, some Hipshot open gear tuners, which are some of my favorite tuners right there, especially for the price. Hipshot is so funny part is I always praise Godot cause I like Godot stuff, but so, you know, Hipshot is my favorite stuff. And then Godot is my second favorite. But when I say that, it's not like I like Hipshot more than, it's 2%. I like Hipshot 2% more than Godot. So they're, to me, almost the same. I should almost just say they're the same. Okay, then we have a rosewood fretboard here with no inlays on the neck. Okay, three-way switch. And then we have two volumes and one tone, which is what I've said before in many videos. I wish everybody would just go to that idea. I don't need two tones. I do love having two volumes. No push-pulls because, of course, you have P90s. And then a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful over-the-top piece of flamed maple that you really don't see on mass-produced guitars. It's very rare do you see tops that are have depth like this. I mean, the sides of this. Let me switch right here. Look at the sides. I mean, the flame goes through and then right through. Look at that. And it's popping. And I know some of you are going to say this because you guys will say, well, yeah, but I have a mass-produced guitar that does it too. You do, but some of those mass-produced guitars, they highlight some of that stuff. You know, there's, I'm not saying they all do that, but there is some trickery, you know, done to make things look a little better. They don't do that stuff when they do low production guitars, smaller builders and stuff. They don't have to. They just get good pieces of wood because they don't need 5,000 of them or 500 pieces. So they can do stuff like that. So let's play this thing. I have it plugged in to my Fender 65 Deluxe Reverb head. As you guys saw that video, I've converted my combo to a head. That's running into a 112 cream back. And then that's mic'd up. And we'll go ahead and play it. Now, I will use some overdrive. I have an OD11 pedal. And then I might need to tune this up. So let me tune it first while I talk. In fact, I should have tuned and talked. Okay, so just for the record, A's in tune, D's in tune, G's in tune, B's in tune. Oh, so it's just a low E. So I probably knocked it, the low E, a little out of tune when I was trying to show it off to you guys. Okay, so let me go ahead and play some stuff for you. Let's do this. Wow, that neck pickup really opens up. That. Yeah. Love the neck. Let's do the overdrive. I'll go back to clean in a second, too. Overdrive, this is the overdrive pedal. Here's why I like having two volumes on, especially a P90 guitar, is because on a guitar like this, when I'm playing gain, I'm going to mostly be in the bridge. So what I'll do is I'll turn the volume off the neck. So when I go to the bridge, and I'm getting a little, that 60 cycle hum, I can, that's my kill switch for it. So it just makes things easy. Let's do the neck. Let's go back to clean. And I want to show the middle position. So here is the neck pickup again. Let's do that middle position. Okay, so a couple questions I see is what kind of fretboard radius is? I don't know. Let's see if it says on their website. It feels like 12 to me. That's what it feels like. It doesn't feel super flat. It doesn't feel like a 14 or 16. And it doesn't feel round like a 9.5. So I'd be surprised if it's 10, but it could be. I would say 10 to 12. So not super flat, but not kind of round, if that helps. And then what other questions? See, one thing I thought about, I never thought about when we did last week's Guitar of the Week, was I played it, demoed it, and I went on, and I go, maybe you should ask a couple questions, because that's something you can't do on a produced video. So, let's see. Oh, weight-wise, this guitar is not very heavy. So, I would say, I know I weighed it when I first got it. I want to say it was, like, in the high sevens. So, it wasn't 8 pounds, but, I mean, it was, so this is what I can tell you, though. They sent another one. There's another one here. That's a Challenger Level 1. That does not have the maple cap. That thing's like air. So here's what I can tell you. If you want the guitar to be super light, I would go with a all-mahogany version, the Level 1, for sure. Texas Toast uses 10-inch radius. Okay, see, like I said, felt kind of round. Like I said, I figured it could be 10 or 12. I just knew it wasn't super round like a 9.5, and it wasn't super flat like 14. And then scale length is 24 3/4. So they, what does the fretboard smell like? So, you know, what's funny is I know that's meant to be a joke. I have a piece. I don't know if you guys know this. I have a piece of Brazilian rosewood, in my shop that was given to me. And, And what's nice about it is one of the things you can do when somebody comes over, it's like my favorite thing to show people, is that if you take a piece of Brazilian rosewood and you scratch it with your finger, I'm not making this up, and you smell it, it smells like roses. So Brazilian rosewood smells like roses. So there you go. Tone smell. So yeah, it's really cool guitar. The neck is not chunky at all. Definitely would put it in the Fender scale length for sure. Fender C shape of kind of feel. Something to note though is the fret ends are amazing. There's no, I know I don't have the sock on or anything, but there's no issues at all. They're definitely like they're beautifully polished in every way. The fretboard edge though is not rounded over. So that is, if you guys watch, recently I was just watching, here, I'm going to put this away. Give me 1 second so I can put it in the rack here. Okay. I was watching Jeff Kiesel talk about this, and he was talking about Alan Holdsworth, and he was saying that he didn't like his fretboard edge rounded because he didn't want to lose any real estate on the fretboard. And that is sometimes a choice. Some people don't like the fretboards rounded because they find that their high E, low E falls off the side. So this one is not rounded at all. That could be for that reason. It doesn't cut into my hand. They did a really good job with that. So it's a beautiful guitar. I'm really, really thankful that they sent it. Very cool. And like I said, there's another one here. So maybe we'll figure out what that's about and we'll see what we're going to do with that one. But I wanted this to be Guitar of the Week because I thought it'd be fun. And then Susan says, fret dots on the side. Fret dots are on the side. So there is fret dots on the side, just not on the front. So that's all I really need is the dots on the side. And then somebody said the finish. It doesn't feel like there's any finish on it. So I don't know what finish they're using. I know this. It's not nitro. They don't use nitro. They use polyurethane or urethane is my guess because they prefer it, and there's a ton of good reasons why they prefer it. And this guitar, I don't know if there is any finish on there, and if it is, it's satin finish, and it feels natural. That's the important part, is this. It feels natural. So if they do have a satin finish on it, it's not noticeable because, like I said, it feels like I'm holding a piece of beautiful wood and not, any kind of Skittles coating on it or anything like that. So there you go. That's your Guitar of the Week. I need a song. Guitar of the Week. Something like that. And I won't go flat. Guitar of the Week. I don't know. Something, right? Is that how they do it? So I don't know. Need Guitar of the Week song. But I thought this would be fun to do Guitar of the Week because we clipped them and put this on the second channel too. And then it's a little easier than the deep dives. And you have deep dives. And then we have the Guitar of the Weeks. And we can mix them, match them, do multiples of them. Play around with it, keep it fun. But all that playing around means we have to go back to work now. So, because that definitely wasn't work. That's the fun part. The going back to work is, where do we leave off? We left off with Seth. Seth says, Phil, thank you so much. Discovered Monty Montgomery due to you, and he has quickly become one of my favorite guitar players. He is amazing on every level. Monty Montgomery is so, so awesome. I'm glad you discovered him. My two favorite singer-songwriter musicians, definitely Monty Montgomery, and then it's Bob Schneider. By far. I listen to Bob Schneider a lot more than I listen to Monty Montgomery. Bob Schneider is more of a singer-songwriter type personality, and he's an odd duck sometimes. He's got some definitely more commercial-friendly music and then a lot of odd stuff that I just really get into, but very cool. Thank you, Brandon, for the super chat. Dan says, hey, Phil, have you seen the Lightning Guitars tailpiece? Lightning guitar tailpiece. Recently put one on my SG. It's great. So I think what you're referring to is the tailpiece where the strings come at a higher angle so you don't have to wrap around. Let me go ahead and Google that so I don't have to guess. Because I have seen... yes. Lightning bolt. They're calling a lightning bolt. I don't know if that's what you're talking about, because I type in lightning. No, it is. It is what I thought. Lightning guitars. It's funny. There's a lightning bolt tailpiece too. Okay, so lightning guitars. Let me show you here. Boom, here it is. So, yes, I did see the advertisements for this. What it is exactly what you see here. They have basically redesigned the tailpiece, so they changed the angle of the string coming over the bridge. So for those of you that don't know, a lot of players from obviously Greg Allman from the Allman Brothers, Zach Wilde, they like to wrap their string around. They come in from here, the ball in from this side. They come around and they go over the tops and they top wrap their bridge. And they come over here and do that. This is essentially going to give them the same effect. And you don't have to do that crazy nonsense or wrap it around the top. I have not tried it. For those of you that are like, why the hell would you want to do that? Well, it's because you have some money and you want... No, I'm just kidding. Why do you want to do that? Well, it's really simple. It does change the feel of the strings. That's what that does. It changes... By changing that, you change how it feels when you do vibrato. And it has an effect. So it just does. That's why they top wrap their strings sometimes. That's why you can raise and lower that tailpiece. That's what that essentially is doing, is changing the way it feels. And somebody once asked me, they said on a show like this, I think we talked about something like this, they said, well, I don't understand because the strings are tuned to pitch, so isn't the tension the same whether the tailpiece is low or high? And the tension is the same, but the resistance when you bend isn't because of how far over. The way I want you to think of it, if you could, I'm going to use this guitar, this cable here as an analogy, is if I wrap this around my hands like I just did and I pull it tight and you were to pluck on it and I pull it as hard as I can, you would understand that if you pulled on it, you could pull it a certain amount, right? If I didn't wrap it around my hands and I held it just like this, you would understand that you could pull it very easy from me, even though if I was holding the same tension, right? So there is a difference in not the tension, but in how when you bend on the string, how it gives is the best way to put that. And that's the way you want to think of that. That's why you want to do that. That is why, so you know, guitar companies, if you ever seen string through body guitars where all the strings are different lengths, that's not just randomly done. That's done with some kind of strategy to change the way the feel is on when you're doing the bending. There is, now, this is one of those things where if somebody says, I don't notice a difference, I'm not going to argue with you. And if you're going to say, I notice a difference, I'm not going to argue with you. What I have noticed over the years is some slight difference. It's a slight difference. And if it matters to you, that matters to you. That's where we all should lay, is if it's a bit, whether it's a little difference or a lot, if it matters to you, it matters to you. So I have not tried their actual bridge yet. I would be interested in doing so. I don't know how I would make a video out of that. That's one of those, like, I guess you have to make a little Instagram, little video, because it's kind of short and to the point. I put it on and it doesn't suck. That's kind of what, I don't know. That's what I think of that. But very cool. I like the idea, and it seems like one of those things, like kind of like the save file for Music Nomad. Like why didn't somebody think of that? So easy, so smart. Okay. Then we have John Clark, who says, Phil, thoughts on the new Epiphone guitar prices? We talked about that last week. New Gibson prices and the respective values of the used market. We talked about this, John, we talked about this last week, and I put them as pod clips too. I didn't specifically go into details about my feelings of the Epiphone prices, like whether or not I'm a customer or not. But, you know, I'm gonna old man it up a little bit and be like, man, these prices are getting crazy. It's tough. Here's what's tough. It's tough when, you know, you're dealing with the fact that the manufacturers are raising prices and the used prices are coming down. That makes it tough. It's brutal. Look, I've been in that environment before. That happened in the last recession in 2008. So I was there physically going through it as a business, where every order I did with Fender, every order I did with manufacturers, they were raising the prices on me because they just came out of a boom, right? They were like, you know, remember before the recession in 2008, there was a boom, just like, and so the manufacturer's like, oh, 10% increase, 5% increase. And then what was happening was, as I was, you know, you would buy the new Fenders for more, the market was slowing and therefore the used price was dropping. And then it really got trouble in the store when you're like, you know, American Strat was $13.99 up from, you know, $12.49 the previous year. So up $150, $13.99 for American Strat on the wall at that time, 2008, nine. And a used one, you were lucky to get $800, $850, if you're lucky. And a store, you know, people would sell them on Craigslist for $7. That's half, man, half. You know, that's, it takes a lot. You're like, even if you're like, I hate purple and I only like Sunburst and the Sunburst is $1,400, but the purple is $7, I'm going to get purple. So right now it's going to be tough, and it's going to be tough for a while. Now, when I say tough, this is the important part. Okay. Guitars are still moving. Things are still moving. So this is it is accurate to say that the used market has softened significantly, to the prices have definitely come down from where they were, for sure. The new market prices have gone up and continue to go up, but there's constant sales. That is accurate. That is reflective of a decrease in consumer buying and guitars buying. However, at that same time, you guys are still buying like crazy. You can still see it. You're still buying. I don't even have to guess. So I don't have to guess. This channel, this is like the only thing I can say. This channel has sold through affiliate links and trackable links $16 million worth of gear in its life. That's an insane amount. That means that's what's tracked. That's what's something I can show. I could show you on a chart. I don't know why you would care to see it, but I could show it to you that it happened. I don't track, and I can't track when content has gone out and you've ordered through Sweetwater through the phone, or you walked into a guitar center and maybe that happened. But to know that that much gear has been sold through the channel, to me, seems like a lot. It does seem like a lot, especially if you break that down by year. And here is the interesting part. It is not dramatically down from where it was in what you're still spending. Because remember, I'm not, most of this trackable stuff, you understand, isn't direct to me. In other words, I'm not saying, hey, buy this, mug. And then you click the link and you bought that mug. That's not what I'm talking about when I'm saying trackable links and affiliate links. What I'm saying is there's links, you click them, and whatever you buy, it's transacted. The channel receives a very small percentage. To give you an idea how small a percentage it is, $16 million does not equate to a whole lot when it comes to affiliate trackable links. But the point is that I see it every day because I pull it up. That's my mentality. I get up every day. You guys know I used to do reporting, you know, Oracle database. You know, I was Oracle certified and did reporting for a large company a long time ago. Feels like a different life now, but there's just a part of me that has to look at the numbers. And so every morning, the first thing I do is I look up all the trackable links. What I've seen consistently is stuff is still selling in all the categories, in all the price categories. The middle hurts the most, it seems. If I was going to throw a guess, and that's when we're talking about opinion versus facts, those are facts, that's happening. Opinion feels like low price stuff and high price stuff still moving, and the middle is just missing. So it's like getting somebody to spend $800, $500 to $800 right now is a little tough. Getting some people to spend $200 is easy, and $2,000 seems to be easy, which is strange. And everything else in the middle doesn't seem to be moving like normal. But the point is, you guys are still buying like crazy because I get to see it every day. I pull it up and look at what everybody's doing across all the ways that, you know, all the links, all the platforms. So if that helps. And again, that is just in my own little micro world of stuff. But I do hang out with a lot of YouTube channels on the regular through calls, Zoom calls, having dinner, you know, with them, whatever. And in discussions, everyone sees about the same thing. So we're all seeing the same activity, which to me says that the market's still moving. You guys are still buying. So I'm still buying stuff. That's what we all have, a sickness. But it's a beautiful sickness to have, isn't it, guys? Okay, so we're going to go with Clown House Cats says, new guitar day, Blues Steakhouse Majesty BFR. Oh, that's Blue Steakhouse. I want to show everybody that. So he's got a Majesty Music Man Petrucci guitar. But that color is really cool. And will it come up? the steakhouse comes up, but not the Blue Steakhouse. It's not coming up. I'm sorry, guys. I want to share it with you. Oh, Blue Steakhouse. Here it is. BFR Blue Steakhouse. Here we go. And images. Here it is. Okay, cool. I think I got one. All right. Kinda. Close enough. Here you go. Look at that. So it is called Blue Steakhouse, but there's no blue in this. Oh, there is blue. That's what, right? It's subtle. It's right there. Let's see if that, look at that one. I don't know. It's gorgeous. I saw a picture of it. That's why I wanted to share it. I saw a picture of it recently. You know, when we talk about John Petrucci earlier, him saying he's got the number one selling guitar, one thing we really don't pay attention to is he is a master at just constantly releasing a new version of the guitar and people getting excited about it. I'm a sucker for every new release. I'm just like, what's new now? What's new now? It's the same guitar. It's just, oh, what? He's added purple? So, but, you know, that's kind of fun. It is fun. Ben says, watching while deployed in Europe. Hey, thank you for your service. What happened to the PRS SAS SE rolled edge instruction video? We didn't do it on that guitar. I did it on a different guitar. The video has not been released. Here's why. There's been discussion of whether it's going to be a patron-only video or go out to the mass channel. I've said this before. The problem with a video like that is that you don't want people thinking, because I got to be very clear, this is one way to do it on one type of guitar. Here's one way. Because I don't want you messing up guitars. This is not something that's super easy to do that. And it's one of those things like, so you understand, I'm just being cautious because it's not as simple as other things. A lot of things, if you notice certain things, I take more time revamping and running through until I know, because again, I just want to make sure it's understandable. Most people could understand what I'm saying or what I'm doing. So that's all. But because you mentioned it, I'll put it as a priority this week to get it wrapped up. K-Dog, love that. K-Dog says, what does K-Dog say? Hey, Phil, I hope your dog is doing better. He is doing much better. Let's knock on wood here. He has not had an issue since the last time we talked about it on this channel. So we're hoping the new meds are doing their job. Recently got a new Yngwie Malmsteen Strat, and I want to change from 9s in E to 8s to 46 in E-flat. Will I need to adjust the truss rod for that? You may have to relieve the truss rod a little bit, a quarter turn or so. I mean, I say a quarter turn, it's kind of too general, but yes, the answer is yes. You may need to relieve the neck because you're really lightening the tension. That's about it. I mean, you might have intonation adjustments to make on the bridge, but you won't know until you put the strings on. It's not a huge deal because, like I said, you are sticking to 46. The 8s to 46 are not going to be dramatically different from the 9 to 42s in tension. It's just a half step down. And that neck, because they do kind of move away, it's all scallops. They move away a lot of wood. When you move out a lot of wood on that neck, that neck is prone to moving a little bit more, obviously, just a little bit. So I'd be prepared for that. But it's not a big deal, and especially on that guitar. So the bullet truss rod's at the top. You just make your adjustment. You can't really mess it up as long as you use the right Allen wrench for it and you make a small adjustment. Just like I said, a little bit. Okay, Mike's Musical Rehab. Okay, says, I want to thank you for giving the knowledge to make any guitar play like a great guitar, no matter the price. You know, I thank you for that. That is one thing I really like hearing one, it's nice to get feedback like that. It's always kind. But I like the fact that, like I said, I want every video when I review a guitar, when we talk about guitars, to be like, here's a tidbit on how to make it better. Because I think that's what happens to a lot of us. You get a new guitar and there's something that needs to be adjusted. Like I said earlier today on the show, no guitar is perfect. There's just no such thing. So, you know, if you can just make those fixes yourself, and if they're easy, it's great to do them because a lot of them are easy. Some of them are not so much, but it's nice to take hard work to a guitar tech, not easy work to a guitar tech. So Derek says, hey, Phil, happy Friday, 3.5 years into playing, and I've only just learned about the Nobel's ODR-1. He's talking about the pedal. Love it. What other fantastic overdrives am I overlooking? That's a great pedal. My favorite style of overdrive is the, for lack of a better term, I'm going to say the Dumble style overdrives. What I mean by that is like the Zen drive. The pedal you heard me playing today is the OD-11. That's Love Pedal's version of the Zen drive. So I have a Zen drive and I'm playing the copy. I kind of like this copy. There are a ton of them like that. You know, another pedal that I think falls in that vein, it's not that style, but that vein. When I think of the light gain overdrive tones that I like, to me, it's going to be like the OD-11 from Love Pedal, which they don't make anymore, which is tough. The Zen drive, which you can still get from Love Pedals. The 68 by Lawrence Petros pedals. Again, just that light overdrive. It's just beautiful sounding. Then the Soul Food. This is a great pedal by Electro Harmonix. That's a fantastic pedal. Talk about a pedal that punches above its weight, just way above its weight. Those are the pedals I like for that. And then, of course, I like an SD1 from Boss, stuff like that. Light overdrives, a Blues Driver from Boss. I mean, I could go on for hours about all these light overdrive pedals that are fantastic. And I'm not in the right screen to see what everybody's putting in the comment sections, but I'm sure the comment sections are all labeling them too. And whatever they say, I'm probably agreeing with them too, because it's just a really great light overdrive pedal. And that's what I like. If you notice, that's what I was using. That through a Fender, that's it for me. Like, I'm always happy with that. Like, I mean, I love all these amps and I love all this stuff, but I could be always happy with just any Fender, really decent Fender amp and just a light overdrive. And even if I'm playing more aggressively, I'll just use a boost in front of it. So that's another thing I like about light overdrives. On this pedal rig I'm using right now, I'm OD-11, but then I have a super clean drive. Normally I have my Enhancer Fire pedal on here, but this is my small board, so I don't have it on there. But a little something like that into a light overdrive. I love it. Super Elite 100 says the JHS Morning Glory. That's a good pedal. I like that one as well. Yeah, Brian says, if you don't like a Tube Screamer, try the SD1 instead. I could go with that. I have a Tube Screamer, I have a TS9. That's all I have anymore. I had an 80s one. I just sold it to one of my patrons. Wayne got it, and I think he likes it. I don't know. But it's a great pedal, but I found myself always using, like, the Boss SD1 more. Isn't that funny? Silliness. So, Yeah. I'm looking at the clock, trying to figure out if we've got time to go into another subject, a different subject about something like that. But let's stay on task. Fret Live of Midnight says, the Copper State should be called the Dust State. He's talking about Arizona. From Texas now in Arizona, are you running an air purifier in your guitar room to mitigate the dust? I don't run an air purifier in here. We have air purifiers in the house. I know nothing about them. I didn't buy them. I didn't put them anywhere. This is stuff my wife has done. I do know this. This is so you get off topic real fast on the Guitar Channel. We change our air filters. So we have a two-story house. So in a two-story house, you have two AC units, which is two heaters. One is upstairs, one is downstairs. So we have two intakes, for air filters. So I'm replacing those all the time. That's a huge part. They get dirty here. It's very dusty here. Yes, to answer your question. It's very dusty. And that's why all my guitars have dust on them. You just have dust. So we just drink water. Why am I drinking water all the time? Because you inhale dirt here pretty much. Cappy C says, I just got a KYG sticker, unexpected and nice. Oh, that's cool. That's obviously my wife did that. So, I wonder Cappy, if you got one of the cool new Heat, was that one of the Heat ones? I'm curious. She's still testing that. So you guys know, I've told you guys about this. She has a way to send you a logo so you can put it on a shirt. You just do it yourself. But she's been testing the quality of it and with patrons and stuff and viewers who have been guinea pigs and putting it through the rings, through its paces. So I'm just curious if that's what you got. Okay. Harmonicaster says PRS got started with an order from Samash. This is true. He talked, Bo Samash said that story on my podcast, and Paul Reed Smith told that story on my podcast. With decline of NAMM and dominance of Sweetwater, who will not intro new brands? How can new brands get a foothold? Okay. Well, Harmonicaster, for $5, that's how much your super chat is, I'm going to give you $50,000 worth of advice. That sounds pretty egotistical, doesn't it? But I'm going to do it anyways. So you understand, this is at detriment to myself, because I don't know if I should be talking about this, but I'm going to give it to you. What I mean by give it to you, I'm going to give you any brand out there that's a small brand that wants to watch this podcast. If whatever I can do to help you or this community is what my goal is, so let me tell you what I can help you with. The statement is, what he's basically saying is that obviously Samash gave Paul Reed Smith his first PO order. This is true. And I don't know if you know this, but with that order, Paul Reed Smith was able to take that order to the bank and then get a loan to secure his facility. This is an absolute true story. Like I said, it was told to me personally by Paul Reed Smith and then verified by Sammy Ash, God rest his soul. So, the point of that is, his question is, how will that happen in the future? How will that happen when everything is just this soulless, lifeless, dead internet? Well, unfortunately, that will still happen because people are always going to be people. You know, the world has changed significantly, but people are still generally the same. We still interact with each other. You're interacting here. You're hanging out here. We're hanging out with people. The technology has changed how it's happened, but we're doing it. So people are still the same. So that's good. But the big difference that's important is exactly what I was talking about earlier about data. The internet and data is going to change that. So when you say in your question comment, Sweetwater, who's the dominant force, will not intro new brands. That is not true. Okay. So now what's funny is, Harmonicaster, I actually know a little secret, because you sent me this email. I saw it. I had it pinned, but I didn't get to it. And in his full email, he mentioned that he talked to a VP, I think, at marketing or sales at Sweetwater, and they said they're not adding any new brands. Well, they are adding new brands. He might have said that to you because maybe now they've discussed it, put a hold on it, because they did add a lot of new brands. First of all, let me just start here. Sweetwater, since 2019, has added an insane amount of new brands, in my opinion. A lot of that was the boom, but it's a lot. They've added everything from Victory Amps. They've added, I'm trying to think. I should have all these in my head. You guys know, just go on Sweetwater. They've been adding brand after brand after brand after brand. It's been a really crazy amount of brands. Zither Stands, they added Zither Stands. That happened as well. Now, here's the other part. They just recently added Amplified Nation. Amplified Nation is a full announcement. I'm actually leaking it. You guys, if you're savvy, you know, because you can go on Sweetwater's site and their amps are on their website right now. Amplified Nation, who's a very small builder, albeit a high-end custom shop builder, is now on Sweetwater. So they just added their brand. It's officially not even happening until next week. So they are adding brands. Here's the difference, though. It's how brands are added. You're not going to have for those of you that have a brand and you're trying to get into a big chain now, you're not going to be able to walk in like Paul Reed Smith, talk to the owner or the CEO of Sweetwater and say, hey, I really have a dream to make this happen. And I let play my product and they play it and they love it and they buy it. Although there is still a little bit of that going on. Like I said, what's really happening now is this. When you approach Sweetwater, okay, this is why I said this is the good information to have. If you're a small brand and you approach Sweetwater, let me tell you what they're doing. The first thing they're doing is they're looking in their own website data to see how many of their customers search for your product. So if you're, I'm going to pick my own brand, Blackstock Pickups. So for instance, if I contacted them and said, hey, I have these pickups called Blackstock Pickups. I want you to carry them. And I get it. And I'm lucky enough to get a hold of one of the buyers. And the first thing they're going to do is going to check their own data to see how many of their customers are looking for this product in the first place. That's the first thing. And if that number is very low to non-existent, that's probably going to be the end of this conversation. It's just going to go like that. No one's looking for it. They're not here to push it. They're here to give their customers, because this is the important part. These guys have the customers, these big chains. They're not looking for customers. I mean, they are, but they're not. They're looking for products. The analogy I like is like QVC. They're going to make 365 videos a year. They already have all the grandmas and grandpas watching QVC. I mean, no offense, just I always think of my mom when I'm thinking of QVC, but you know, whatever. They have people watching QVC. The same people are buying and buying over and over again. They're going to buy Tupperware today, and they're going to buy fishing lures tomorrow, and they're going to buy the same thing. And they're basically just looking at new products. Sweetwater's looking for new products all the time to feed their customer base, but they're looking for something their customer base already wants. They're not looking to try to convince them to buy anything. They just want to find out what they already want and be there, kind of there. So here's what that's the first thing they do. Second thing they're going to do, if there is search results, okay? So it's like, oh, people are going on our site and searching for these things. And some of you guys have experienced this. You go to search a product at Sweetwater and you type it in. It says, no, we don't have that, but check out these brands instead. That's where that data, that message to you, that has been saved. Somebody can see that now in a report and see that you guys search for it. Then we're assuming now that there's a lot of searches. Then they're going to look at the market, see how much social media you've created. Right? I mean, it's a no-brainer. You already know they work with every YouTube channel. There's probably not a YouTube channel on YouTube that doesn't have at least 20 to 30,000 subscribers that doesn't have some kind of relationship with Sweetwater at this point. Like I told you guys, they're a big company, so they can reach out and work with you in some way. So same thing. They're going to look, did Phil McKnight do a video of this product? Did AggieFish do a video of this product? Did Rhett Shaw do a video of this product? Did Ben Coombs do a video of this? Because again, it's going to be like, they're just going to look to see what's out there. They're going to see. There's small communities. There's what's called micro-influencers and medium. I don't know. It's all dumb. That part I don't care about. But there's different levels of influencers, okay? Micro, I think, is the smallest, and there's like a medium goes up. My wife explained it to me. So anyways, the important part is this. They're going to look at that, see how much social media they're pushing. And then they're going to see how many dealers they have and what's carrying. And believe it or not, the answer is not what you think. They're not looking to go, oh, good, there's no dealers. We'll have this cornered. They want to see that dealers are carrying it and dealers are stocking it, because that means they're selling through. What they don't want to see is 50 dealers, and out of the 50 dealers, only four of them show that they have any of it in stock, which means dealers aren't reordering it, which means it's not doing well. And that's all preliminary. That's just at the very beginning of trying to figure out if they're going to have a brand. Because what's important about this is to understand that at their level, they're not, I've at my level, let's just pick on me for a second. I've now have three, for Christ's sakes, three companies I've done videos for that literally closed shop after I did the video for them. Because they, so I mean, it was the worst decision of my YouTube to do this. Because I did a video for a company that literally they were trying to start, and then they got, I don't know, flooded with orders. Maybe they got upset because they didn't get orders. I'm not sure what the deal is, but all of a sudden they're gone. That's not what Sweetwater wants either. They don't want, hey, we sold 50,000 black stock pickups. Oh, let's back up. We sold 5,000 black stock pickups, and I'm like, well, I can wind two sets a day. So if you get me, I'll get on it right now. It's not going to work. It's just like, it's a shit show. So excuse my language. So they are going to do their diligence and do things like that. This is why it's important for brands now to be involved in communities. That's how you start. You know, you get out there, you get with people, you get them knowing about your product, you get them excited about your product. This is very important, because here's why. None of those things that I, like I said, all those things I just talked about, none of those things cost money. You know, get out there, make a social media channel, get out there, post on Instagram, get out there, talk to a small dealer, let a small dealer talk about you. It's more important to get those things done now than ever before. Because think about this, I'm sure maybe we could get Paul Reed Smith on the channel. Maybe we would talk to him saying, hey, if you had to do it all over again, Paul, how would you do it? However, I would think that's a big waste of time, because that guy is everywhere on every channel constantly. I mean, if you can't almost turn on YouTube without seeing Paul Reed Smith. You mean the guy who was smart enough to go out there and handshake with dealers and start his company, and now 30 years later, he's all over social media? I think that he's proven my point, which is that's how he would do it now. Paul Reed Smith would still probably walk into the Guitar Center, the Sam Ash, and other stores, but he would also be doing what he's doing now, getting his social media out there, getting things out there. And that's what they're going to do now. So Sweetwater is taking in new brands, and they will continue to take in new brands and small brands. But those brands have to be able to supply their base of customers. So that's a big problem. So you're going to have to grow to that. And the best part about this is, if you can't get with Sweetwater, who cares? Who cares? I have 10 friends that make $1 million a year on YouTube, and they literally just, I mean, as companies, they're millionaires. $1 million companies that are successful through using YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, you name it, you know, whatever, Twitter X, whatever the hell it is. All that stuff. They that's how they solicit and work with those things. They don't even need Sweetwater or a big chain. They can be direct and be extremely successful because of the fact that it's so easy. It's really easy. And when I say it's really easy, I mean it's really easy to understand the plan and execute on it. The rest is all hard work. It's the hours and hours of time and the luck of getting it all to land. But it's definitely the way things are going to go for a long time. And it's that's my advice to those companies. So to you and to your question, I understand what you're saying. But Paul Reed Smith, that's exactly, I think, how it would happen. Is if it didn't happen the way it did 30 years ago, he would be out on social media. The way companies like Kiesel, they don't need Sweetwater. They are direct only, and they're doing well. There are brands that are, just through the mom-and-pop system that works. Because you're going to understand the mom-and-pop system. The problem with the mom-and-pop system going forward in the future for a lot of the smaller brands is once they get volume, it's really hard because it's really expensive to deal with 500 different customers. It's really nice to have a one-stop shop. But most of those small brands will tell you that what they do is they usually have one Guitar Center account or one Long & McQuaid account, or one Thomann account, or one Sweetwater account. That's their big account, and then they have the smaller accounts, and that kind of works for them. So that works. So that's my 2 cents on that. And then, like I said, that's Sweetwater is still adding brands, even though I bet you their go-to is they're not. I would imagine if anyone contacts them, they're going to tell you they're not, because they're not really not. You got to kind of be special to get on there. And be a little different, have something a little cool to offer, and of course be out there marketing like crazy, because all that marketing you're doing, they don't have to do, and that's what they want. They want to handle the customer service side. They want the customer to call them and, take the sale and take care of the customer. AJ says, hey, polishing frets with a Dremel. I tried using an Emery impregnated polish wheels, but it was way too coarse. Okay. Use cloth attachments instead. No. Any specific speed setting? Any compounds? I don't use any compounds. You can. Absolutely. I don't use any. And I use the wheels that you get at Stumac. Let me show you what I use. I have a video out there. That's why I said we're working on compartmentalizing the small videos so that you can easily find them and not worry about the video they're in. Okay, this is it. This is the fret polishing wheels I use. This is it. These are way perfect. I have both. I tend to use the green the most, but you can use both. In my video, I showed that I use a little screwdriver. I use the shaft of a screwdriver, and I kind of make a little groove in the center of them so it rides across the fret. And I do that really cool. A lot of the polishing compounds and stuff are probably to reduce friction. One of the downfalls, of course, if you Dremel polish your frets, is that if you heat up your fret, you can cause problems. One of the things is that you will do when you heat up the fret is it'll spread out because it actually expands. Sometimes when it cools, it goes back, but sometimes it doesn't. The other thing that can happen is if you have a lot of oil or moisture in the fretboard, the heat will actually kind of boil that out. And then sometimes the frets lift a little bit. So that's where it gets a little dangerous right there. So you want to make sure you don't heat the frets up. That's why some people will probably tell you to use some kind of polish for basically lubrication. But I'm not using that. I just, that's, I've just been doing it for so long, and it's the way I like to do it. I have a video on it, so I suggest you go out there and look for it. But what I will do this weekend is try to find the video, isolate it, and make a clip video of it as well, or maybe just make a new one. I did a ton of video on polishing frets, and a lot of them didn't include the Dremel wheel. And a lot of people were like, why don't you use the Dremel wheel? And I was like, well, actually, that's all I use pretty much. But I was trying to make a lot of videos where the average person could do polishing frets. The Dremel is, in my opinion, the Dremel wheel is the absolute best way to polish your frets. It's fantastic. But you can... one, keep in mind, not only can you heat the fret, there can be a problem. The big problem with it, if you use a fret guard, sometimes that's good and that will help and that'll be enough. You definitely want to painter's tape them off. But the problem sometimes even with the fret guard is when the Dremel wheel slips off, if you hit the fretboard, just even lightly, you're just going to cut. It's just going to cut a little cut into the fretboard. And then that's a nightmare. So that's why I try to stay away from it, from the average person just going, hey, why don't you take this thing that can damage your fretboard and do it to make your frets slightly more polished? Because that's what you get. You get a slightly better polish than you can get with the fret polishing systems that I've highlighted in my 10. I did a video 10. I think that's where I use the Dremel wheel in there. This is 10 fret polishing systems. In my opinion, steel wool, triple-aught and quadruple-aught steel wool, it works as good as anything I've ever tried. And the complaints are always that, you know, you can get fibers on the pickups. I painter's tape those off, but they do as good as anything else. 80%, you get your frets 80% looking as good as you can do with anything else, including the Dremel wheel. But the Dremel wheel is a little faster, and I think it's a little better. So there you go. Harmonicaster says, thanks. Advice was worth more than $5. If viewers have a harmonica player in their band, have them search Harmonicaster. Yeah, I will put a link right here for you because I was looking at your link when you sent the email. Like I said, I had it pinned up and it's in this mass screen that I'm looking at right now. That's why I'm glad you, thank you for super chatting it too, because it was one of the ones that we wanted to highlight this week. Was your question? Because again, I liked where it was coming from. It's like, what do you do now? Okay, let's button this show up because we've been doing way too long. First, I want to just say some thank yous real quick. Thank you for Amanda for grabbing questions for me. I'm sorry I didn't get to all of them, but I always keep them, so I have them for next time. I want to thank the patrons and the channel members and everybody from supporting the channel. Everybody who gives it a thank you and a thank you, a like, hit the like button. Because, you know, why not? And subscribe if you can. We're getting close to 400,000 subscribers. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll do something special for that. We haven't decided. We're thinking about a cool giveaway. We're thinking about the best guitar giveaway we've ever done on the channel. That's so you know what we're thinking about. So, thank you for that. To say thank you back to you guys. And then also, thank you to Texas Toast for sending the guitar out. Obviously, that was cool. It was nice for to highlight the guitar and talk about that. I'm sure we'll get more information on the level one and see what we're going to do with that guitar. And see what, I think that'll be exciting. As always, guys, I want to thank you so, so much for hanging out this Friday. I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend filled with playing guitar. And on that note, I'm going to let you go. To the next time, know your gear.
Before you spend your rent, car payment, or child's inheritance here, please see the affiliate links down below.
The Know Your Gear Podcast.